to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Good evening and welcome to the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. I am Greg Williams, and it's just awesome to have you with us here tonight. I know it's Super Bowl. I know it's a good game, but I tell you what, there's more important things. If I was you, I'd just put that on tape and watch this live, because this is going to be something that you can use next week. You may have a friend, you may have somebody that comes into your life, and the information that we share on Breaking the Silence to me is life-changing. And I love, when we started this about a year and a half ago, we would say if you would invest an hour of your time with us each week, we promise you that we're going to give you some information that's going to make your life better, that's going to open your eyes to a world maybe you have not ever been opened up into. And tonight may be very one of those cases. And I love the way that we have this set up to where we can talk about so many different issues. And this is one issue I don't believe we have ever talked about this evening. So I'm just thrilled to have our guest tonight, a great author that's going to be with us just in a few moments. So if you want to call in, we got a whole bunch of people. We got to have a party room going off into our BBS studio, the backstage. Here we have all kinds of people that have kind of joined us, and they're watching us live there. But I hope you're watching us somewhere on Facebook or YouTube or iHeartRadio or wherever. But just welcome to the program, 888-627-6008. And I apologize, as I look at my shirt, you may see polka dots for a long time. When you look away from the camera, you may still see them. So this is blinding you. I didn't realize it was that wild when I put it on. But anyway, 888-627-6008. Put on your calendar. Next week, we have the CEO and the president of ACES Matter. And it is Cindy Stanford, and she's going to be our guest next week. I was on her program last week, and it was an unbelievable hour. But Cindy Stanford is going to be with us on Breaking the Silence at 8 p.m. Central Time next Sunday night, and I believe that's Valentine's Day. So join us then. And next couple of weeks after that, I'm excited. We're going to have a little 10-year-old girl on that just wrote a book about being bullied. And I am thrilled. I've never interviewed somebody that young. And the publicist asked if we could be interested in discussing and talking to her about being bullied in school. It's like, absolutely. Are you kidding? So that's going to be really exciting. We'll let you know more about that. Somewhere about the second week of March, we're going to be having her on. Tonight, though, we have Georgette Todd, and she is the author of an unbelievable book, and we're going to show you. You know, I think right now, write this book title down. You want to get on Amazon or wherever you get good books and buy this book right now. You can buy it on Kindle, or you can start reading it just as soon as the program's over. But she wrote a book called Foster Girl, A Memoir. And I tell you what, a powerful, powerful book. And she has another book upcoming. It's called You Took Me In, What Were You Thinking? Interviews with My Last Foster Mother. And she's been working in the foster care space for over a decade. And her story and writings have been featured on NPR, National Public Radio. CBS Radio, KPBS in San Francisco, the San Diego Union Tribune, and all kinds of other publications. I'm not going to share with you about her story because we have her live here tonight. Georgette Todd, can you hear me tonight?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
You, yes, absolutely. You sound great. And I think we have a whole bunch of your friends in the galley with us tonight. So good to have you. And you're in the San Diego area. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Well, great. Good to have you with us tonight. Now, you know, I've always believed, and it took me a long time, and you just jump in here and tell me if I'm right or wrong. I've always believed that if we can use what's happened to us in our life as a platform of being passionate about something that we're going to use for the rest of our life, our lives are going to have real meaning. You must have one story that is absolutely unbelievable of what you have gone through as a child and using it now to impact others. I want to just start off the program by applauding you and saying thank you for sharing the hurt and the pain and the trauma. And that's what this program's all about. So share with us what you do, how you do it, and then we're going to kind of turn the corner and talk about the book and your life.
Sure, but I got to first start off by saying that I read your book.
Okay.
And even though we're going to interview me tonight, I wish I could just interview you like right now. Because I read your book and I was like, oh my God. And so, yeah, everything you just said to me, I can just easily say to you as well, what you've gone through. And the fact that you put into words the unspeakable, that's why I wrote my book. I'll get into that a little bit, but first of all, my name is Georgette Todd and I work at Connector Kids. It's a technology nonprofit company that creates software specifically designed to find permanent families and supportive connections for children in foster care.
Wow.
We are putting a laser focus on the 20,000 youth who age out of the system every year without supportive networks. Now, Greg, all these youth have families, but they've been disconnected from them for a number of reasons. And also that's the nature of foster care, which I'll go into later on. But we are reconnecting them to these families and also to people who could be in place of a family, like a neighbor or a friend or somebody, a coach or somebody that the youth has connected with. Our organization is unique in that we don't sell our technology. We give them to every child welfare professional in the country for free.
Wow.
And what's also really, really exciting is that we're working on a trauma-informed program to help youth ages 14 to 24 learn about how trauma affects our brains and our relationships. And that's why I can't wait to, I'm going to tune in next week to see Cindy. That will be very interesting to me. To wrap up, for every youth in this country to begin to have a fighting chance, that could only really start happening once they understand what's going on inside them. And for that to happen, we'll make the content engaging, and this program will give them an opportunity to learn how they can heal their own trauma and start building the life that they want. Just imagine if that existed in your day and mine. We've gone through so much we have a better understanding of what's happened to us, but to have that language and that access at such an early age, that is just, I'm so proud to be part of Connect Our Kids. And, I can't go too much more detail about that program that's focused on the trauma, because it's still in development, but we do have trauma experts who are donating their time to create all that content. And we also have a Foster Strong, which is a group of former foster youth who will be donating their expertise and guiding all the content as well. And I'll be contributing to that too. So
that's great. You know, I was a foster parent
Oh, you were.
And matter of fact, we lived, my wife and I, and I believe two of our boys were born. The third wasn't yet. We lived actually in a foster home setting, a Boys Town training model setting in Southern Illinois, where six teenage boys lived with us. So my children was raised in an environment of being outnumbered with six other teenage boys in the house that was in a residential situation. So I'm a firm believer, a powerful, heartfelt believer that if anybody's listening, foster care is needed in this country, probably more now than it ever has, because these children not only have come from a home of hurt, pain, trauma, abuse, but now they are having to try to adapt without their parents in another setting that, as you tell your story, is going to open our eyes to what all those other settings can be like. So it's very powerful. So I appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you.
So tell me about your story, your insight. What happened to you and how early did it happen, Georgette? And feel free to go as deep as you want or as shallow as you want, and I'll respect that.
And I want to first thank you for this opportunity, and it's such a treat and honor to speak to a fellow child abuse survivor who's written a book. That I've never encountered that, you know, to be interfacing with you right now, it's healing me on a level. I can feel it. Okay. All right. So for everybody who doesn't know my story, I entered foster care when I was 14 years old. And I'm going to give some more context here. This was in the mid or the early 1990s. So the internet was barely existing at that point. I didn't know anything about foster care. The only time I heard the word foster was Jodie Foster won an Oscar for Silence of the Lambs. That's the only time I heard the word foster. And also there's an ice cream chain in California called Foster Freeze. But that's it. So foster care, I know what an orphan is, but I didn't know what foster care was. So, so I entered foster care because when my mother had just passed away, she was only 30 years old, and my biological father was never in my life. My parents divorced when I was very young, and then he just split. And I maybe saw him once in the whole time growing up. And my mother remarried. And so the events that led me into foster care at age 14 was, one, my father wasn't around. And it turns out when I did enter the foster care system, my dad couldn't take care of me because he was in prison. And my mother had passed. And so my stepfather was in jail. And the reason why he was in jail is because 6 months before my mother passed away, he got arrested when I was when I had a drug overdose. So let me. I should have started the intro. I should have started. Okay, I'm going to start the story again. From ages 13 to 18, I like to start over. Okay. And I don't care how this comes across. This is my story, and we're talking, okay? And you know, by you putting voice to what you've gone through, you relive it as you speak it.
Yeah, you do.
So, okay, so when I was 13 years old, I was your typical 13-year-old. But my stepfather got a van from a police auction. And in that van, there was kilos of cocaine, lots of bricks of cocaine. So somehow the cops missed it. It was deep in the panels. That's a story that was told to me. So all of a sudden, I'm in this isolated desert community, and suddenly my poor stepfather and my mother had all these drugs on them. You know, they discovered all these drugs. And that changed our lives. It wasn't perfect, but that's when, you know, I'm a teenager and I'm gaining weight, and it's the Kate Moss era, And part of the grooming process was my stepfather said, hey, do you want a way to lose weight quickly? And of course, any young teenage girl, growing girls, yeah, how do I lose weight quickly? And he said, all you need to do is just drink some water and I'll put in some Coke. Don't worry, back in the 1880s, they used to do this and it was legal. Like, it was part of the grooming process. So I knew drugs was bad, but also here's an adult, a role model telling me, you know, just try it. And also I lived again in a drug culture. I lived in kind of like a fringe society in the middle of the desert. So drug use is pretty normalized out there. And so I started taking this concoction and of course I got hooked, you know. And so once I was hooked and I was losing tons of weight and getting accolades from everybody, that's when my stepfather started abusing me sexually. And it happened over a few months' time. And I do remember the bits and pieces, but because I was taking so much drugs, I was self-medicating a lot. You know, some parts are fuzzy, but some are as clear as a bell. And after that, I started taking more and more drugs to the point where I overdosed in Palm Springs. And that's when the cops came in and I was revived. And of course, I didn't want to be revived. You know, I just went through this abuse. As I read in your book, you just want to die. You just don't want to live anymore. You want the pain to die.
Yeah.
And so that's when my stepfather got arrested. And my mother was in the periphery. You know, I knew she knew about the abuse. And, but she was, I mean, okay, so then my mother was just in the, you know, didn't know what to say, except she held me that time when she picked me up from the hospital. And then we just never talked about it. And then 6 months later, she passed away. And so my stepfather's in jail. My father was not even in the picture. And my mother died. So my mother's father, my grandfather, who I loved and adored and did not have a criminal background, he was a solid guy. He took care of me and my sister, who's 2 years younger than I am. So, okay, we're not in foster care at this point. We went through a lot. It was a really bad year, but I'm with my grandfather, who I've had a relationship with and I love. So he took care of us and, but then he saw the drugs right away and he wanted to get rid of it. He's like, I'll smoke a little grass here and there. I'm not going to do this drug. But he should have called the police and he didn't. What he did is he told my stepfather, like, what the heck's going on? And my stepfather's like, I know a guy who'll just take it off your hands and give you some money. My grandfather should have said, no, I'm calling the police, but he didn't. He's like, fine, just get it out of the house. Well, that guy was an undercover DEA agent. So, yeah, that's how I entered foster care. It was a DEA raid, came to the end. There was like a helicopter. It was like an episode of Cops. And all these police officers, guns to my head. And I was in the garage when this deal was going down, and I didn't know what was going down. All I knew is that my grandfather said, go in the garage, don't come into the house until, or it was like a trailer house, don't come in until I come and get you. And so me and my sister were like handcuffed, and I remember a police officer saying, like, going down the list, he's like, don't you have any family? And I said, I know they exist, but I don't know where they're at. I just said I didn't talk to them all the time. And so from there, I entered foster care. And that all happened at the entry point of foster care. We haven't even gone into the foster care story, which we can't because we don't have enough time, but I can summarize.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do, we're going to take our first break. So you're 14 years old at this point.
Yes.
So your mother's passed, your stepfather's in prison, your biological father is nowhere to be found, not a part of your life, and now your grandfather is out of the picture too, and here you are just being sexually abused by your stepfather, the previous year. And was that more than one occasion?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So we have all that trauma, and then all of a sudden, you thought you were going to be in a comfort zone with your grandfather, and then that rug's pulled out. On the other side of this first break, we're going to find out, with all of that trauma and that snowball starting to go down the hill, how does foster care, when you add that layer on, add to the speed of the proverbial snowball going downhill to hell fast? Okay, so I want to talk about that when we come back, just on the other side of this first commercial break. If you want to get involved with the conversation, 888-627-6008. We'll be right back after this short commercial with more of Georgette Todd and this fascinating story. We'll be right back. This couldn't be coming at a better time. Have you ever felt like you were just trapped and couldn't find your way out of darkness? Have you ever felt like you were drowning and fighting to find your next breath? Well, coming in 2020 will be the second of a three-part trilogy, my new book, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. This new book will provide you a step-by-step approach of how to reach that destination, that important destination called hope. Now, two additional resources are going to be made available when this book is released. One, The Map to Hope. It'll be a handy guide that you can carry around with you, put in your briefcase or put in your purse. And this guide is going to help you find your way when you're stuck in life looking and searching for hope. And then the other resource, the Overcoming the Darkness Companion Journal. I have always believed that journaling is the first step to finding real healing and hope in your life. And this journal will guide you down that path. I'm excited about these resources and this new book that's going to be released in 2020, the Summer of Hope. Now back to the next segment of Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams right here on BBS Radio. All righty, welcome back. That's an old commercial. We shouldn't have not run that one. We're going to delete that one, maybe edit that one out. We have a new one. That new book is coming out, hopefully, here real soon. I think, Georgette, you may feel my pain. Writing a book is hard. And I tried to write two books this second time through. So I'm doing the second part of the story, Overcoming the Darkness, and then a youth version. And it has just got up in my attic and really messed me up. And it's so hard, isn't it?
It's so hard because you're reliving it. You can't just like jot it down. You have to stop and think and really walk through what you've gone through. And
how hard is it to put words into the most horrendous acts that can be done. And there's some things that I've yet to even reveal to anybody because I can't even find words to describe what happened. And I'm sure you may have some of those stories too.
Oh my God, yes. And it's like you said in your book, it's guilt and shame, you know, just holds you back. And I just felt so much ashamed of what I went through. But I also learned as I've grown older and, you know, had therapy and had language to what I went through and awareness and my triggers and tracking my emotions. Why am I getting so angry over the littlest things and finding the origin of what I'm really responding to helped me understand what was going on inside me. And so, but I'd like to talk about what you said in your book, that writing it down, as hard as it is, it's so cathartic. It's so, you feel the weight release, the pressure comes off. And like, unlike anything else, like I can talk, and there's other things to do, you know, but nothing compares to writing. It just gets in there.
That's true. I use that on everybody. And apparently you are hitting some people's feelings tonight because my texts are going. We know we're on a good subject. So people are leaning in on the edge of their seat, listening to this story. And
I really can't wait to talk about foster care. And I'll be more succinct this time, I promise.
No, you're doing great. So now that you have been taken literally from your home and you have no other family to go to, how does foster care even, what does that look like on that side of the life when they're coming in and going, okay, Georgia, this is what's going to happen? What's that look like?
You're at the mercy of the adults around you, the strangers. All of a sudden, you're surrounded by strangers and authority figures who know your dirty, dark secrets of family. And then they know why you're in front of them. It's because of all these things happening. I didn't talk about my sexual abuse, though. I did not talk about that. I was like, that's too much for people. It's too much. It's too much for me, and I'm living it. It's right. too much for people to hear. I'm going to shut up and not talk about that, because that will scare potential foster parents. It will. It just will. And so I didn't talk about it, but because of the DAA raid, there was videotapes of my abuse. So that story about me, my sexual abuse, my stepfather used to take video cameras, so the cops found those tapes. So my secret's out. But if they didn't find the tapes, I wouldn't talk about it. Are you kidding me? No way. So, but my entry in foster care, nobody knew about my sexual abuse. I certainly didn't talk about it, you know. And I think they found the tapes right away, but they saw it like a few days or a week later. So that was added to my case file. And that's what foster care does. They track your care of you. You know, you have a case number. Mine was 510-8468. And I went into this institution. It was a residential facility, emergency homeless shelter for children. And I just, you know, told the social worker everything. I'm like, I have an aunt here, I have an uncle here. And, you know, but I didn't know their contact information. I'm a teenager without a cell phone. iPhones didn't exist back then.
Right.
And so they did track them down. And you'll see in the book why one or the other didn't take me in on my mother's side of the family. I didn't know my father's side at all. And so it just got to the point like, okay, we're going to have to live with strangers because our family's not stepping up. And when you're living, you know, when you're a guest in someone's home, but imagine like, no, you're living there. It's like going on a date with somebody and now you're married after the first date. I mean, it's such a weird experience, you know?
Is your sister with you or do they separate?
Yes. And she was with me, thank goodness. And it's so unheard of to have teenager siblings in one home. They normally separate siblings, especially as you're older as a teenager, because it's just easier to place. Nobody is like, hey, everyone wants a baby. Nobody wants teenage siblings. I ended up moving around 12 different times. And when people first hear that, when they don't know anything about foster care, they automatically think, oh my God, what did you do, Georgette? You must be this problem child. So just quickly, I want to explain. Some placements are designed for temporary placements, a 30-day or 60-day or 90 days. So it doesn't matter if you're the best kid in the world, they're going to move you because they have to make room for the next group of kids coming in. And then I'll tell a little bit more, but I want people to read my book. Basically my first foster parent, who I really adored, I actually really liked her, but my foster father died 6 months after of old age, 6 months after my mother died. So I saw my mother die in front of me. And then 6 months later, I'm in my first foster home I saw my foster father die. Well, I woke up and I went into the den and I saw he just wasn't breathing. And so, that was traumatic as well. And then my foster mother, bless her heart, she just was, you know, became unglued after that because her father died and her brother died within 2 months. And she barely took care of herself. And my dad was out of prison. I was like, great, now we're going to be with him. What did he go to prison for? I was making excuses for him. Oh, he didn't abuse somebody. oh, it was a robbery. Well, okay, that's acceptable. I mean, I was just made excuses, and I just wanted, you know, normalcy. And he's biological father, so the judge is like, no, he needs to get his act together before he can take you in. So his sister, my aunt, took me and my sister in. And then, but the state didn't reimburse her fast enough. So again, there's all these variables that had nothing to do with my behavior. And so she just like, she wanted us, but she's like, I can't afford you. And so my father's like, let's just live together in a homeless shelter. And then, so we went with him. And then the system's like, no, you're not going to live in a homeless shelter. So we went reentered in foster care. And again, it's just, yeah.
So
bouncing around.
Tell me inside your head when you are dealing with, you talked about shame and guilt. Mm-hmm. You have shame and guilt of all this stuff that happened to you while you're still with your stepfather, your mother. Does the foster care system give any kind of additional trauma that you can't really be a normal 14-year-old girl when you walk into a school when they go, oh, she's one of those? Does that add to the abnormal amount of stress a teenager goes through anyway? What do you feel like when you're going out into a community for the first time? Or did you get to stay local in the community where people knew you?
No, I did not. And that actually helped me hide. So I didn't announce I was in foster care because I just assumed that the worst would be thought of me. And I was like, I was in survival mode. And I just knew, I was like, education's my way out. I was a pretty smart kid. And so I just felt school is something I can control. So I couldn't control my home life. But boy, I am in control of my schooling as much as I can. But it was hard bouncing around so many times, especially with math. You know, it's steps, and you miss all these steps in between. So I had to go to remedial school, but I just was so determined to just not become where I came from. That was my personal mantra. I was like, I am going to be educated, because nobody in my family, my immediate family, they were not educated. And I just decided to live my life like, I'm going to do the opposite, because the system, I would hear feedback of like, oh, she's moved around a lot. And it just, the worst was always expected of me. It just, I got that feeling. And so my rebellion was to be the best kid possible. I'm like, I'm going to show you, you don't know me. And so, and it was the saving grace was education. And then along the way, I did find good people, good staff members here and there. And my last foster mother really saved my life. So I eventually ended up with a really great foster mom who was a high school teacher. So that meant she was not afraid of teenagers. And that's why my second book is about is my relationship with her. Because in my first book, you see what I'm thinking and feeling. But what was she thinking and feeling? I wanted to get her perspective. And so that's what the second book is about.
Okay, fantastic. Was there ever any... and you may not want to go into this, was there ever any abuse in the foster care system?
Thankfully, no. System? Yeah, no, I'm right. No, thankfully, no. I mean, I really, I think part of it too was, it wasn't conscious, but I ate a lot and I felt like I protected myself with layers of fat. That's something I've struggle with now. I've like in the past couple of years gained 100 pounds, lost 100 pounds, you know, but I was like, I ate a lot, so I was like, good, nobody likes me, fine. Get away, stay away.
You know, that's a major trigger in abused children. They do gain weight selectively, so everybody will stop noticing them.
Yes, and I was invisible. Good. I was so happy to be invisible. So wow. That wasn't even a factor. That was one less thing I didn't have to think about.
Okay, so after you go through these 12, 13 different homes, when did you become emancipated, per se? And you may want to explain what emancipated even means to a layperson that doesn't know anything about foster care.
Great. Yeah. And even the term too is just bizarre, but it's just aging out of the system. You're no longer a foster youth. You're now an 18-year-old. You're an adult. Although nowadays it could be up to 21 and maybe 24, depending on what state, because of the passage of law extending foster care, optional foster care. But in my day, once you turn 18, that's it. Sayonara, you are now out on your own. The system has not set you up. I don't have a lot of life skills, but I turned 18. But again, because I was so focused, Greg, I was thinking about it, like my education, I just focused on going to college. What's my next step? Just focused on that. And I went into a four-year university right away. But when I turn 18, which is in June, I start college in the fall, in August. That means I have a whole summer of where am I going to live? Thankfully, my foster mother said, you can stay. If she didn't, I would have been homeless. And my last social worker, who I actually really liked, she did what the best that she could with the resources that she had at the time. And she gave, I'm turning 18. I'm like, what am I going to do? And she gave me a one sheet piece of paper with a listing of local homeless shelters. And she's like, that was it. That was my emancipation plan. And so, I was like, well, thankfully, because I had a job, I had an after school job, and I saved every dime. So I was like, well, I have enough to, like, I had friends, I could couch surf. I mean, I was like planning on like how to survive until I went off to college. Yeah.
What job did you have?
I worked at Miss Fields Cookies. It was a mall job. I actually met Miss Fields. She's really thin. I'm like, you don't eat your own cookies, do you?
No, she don't eat her own stock, yeah. So basically, when you turn 18, it's just, see ya.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, sorry. It really is a cutoff. And nowadays, there's emancipation conferences. There is more of a transitional plan, but it's still hard. I mean, you read all the statistics out there, you can see why the outcomes are the way that they are. And that's why I wrote my book, because like you, it just wasn't out there. Even though the abuse was rampant, you don't know. You don't hear about it. You don't hear about foster care. You don't hear about people being kids being sexually abused. You don't hear about it. And that's why I really felt compelled to write my book, because I wanted people to not only hear my epic story, but I wanted to understand how the foster care system works. And I did that purposely. That's why it took me over 10 years to write it. Yeah.
Okay. And when we come back from our last break, I want you to describe why you wrote the book, the purpose of it, because I know you have to have, it wasn't just to write it down, because we have journals. I mean, I have journals all over the house. You can just write your story down and put it down. But what impact did you want that book to make on people when they read it? And we're going to dig, I want to drill really deep into that. And then I want to find out what are you doing now with Connect Our Kids, and how you're wanting to change maybe the whole system, the whole program. How can we help from where we're at in Houston? How can people help, that's in California or Florida? They're listening to us all the way around the world tonight. But how can somebody get involved? So we're going to find out all of that on the other side of our last commercial break. If you want to get involved, 888-627-6008. We would love to have a comment from you or a question. Feel free to call in or get on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. And Curtis will be reading about that and telling you all about how to connect with us through that. So we'll be right back after our last commercial break with more of Georgette Todd's story. Be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. All right, welcome back. That was the right commercial, so we're on a roll now. You know, your book is, put your book up and I'll put, there's mine, and yours is Foster Girl Memoir, George S. Todd, and you can get that right now on Amazon.com, and you can, if they want to read it, is it a hardback or softback?
Paperback, yeah.
It's a paperback book. So you can get it mailed to you, or you can get on Kindle and do that directly, and you can start reading it tonight, and it will keep your attention. After you got out of the foster care system, what was some of the challenges? And we've talked briefly about that, but what was some of those things that made you say, yeah, I did it? What was some of those things that you were victorious, that you wouldn't be a victim anymore, you finally did something? What, just tell me some of those good and ups and downs in that period after you were emancipated.
Okay, so the challenges was constantly facing homelessness. I felt like, you know, that was like forefront in my mind. Where would I stay if I, quote unquote, failed in, out of college? That was not even an option. I could not fail. That's just like, so I was studying and working, you know, like, God, 12, 13 hour days, because that was my bread and butter, you know? Right. And so, when I felt like, yes, I got it, when I got my first college degree, I mean, that was a milestone. I mean, I was the first, they call it first generation. Yeah, I went to college. I went all the way. That was like everything to me after bouncing around 12 different schools, and after all that I went through, yet I made it, and I even graduated with honors. Wow. Then I went to grad school, got my master's, I graduated top of my class, and I was a commencement speaker, and it was crisp and concise, unlike tonight, but, you know, it was, that was another aha moment, you know, and so just education to me was so important. It really was. I mean, and that's partly why I wrote, took me 10 years to write, not only because the emotional journey and the catharsis, but I was learning how to write. I was reading all these different techniques on how to write. And I want to share one quick thing that I hope you do this as a writer yourself. The most eye-opening moment for me in a writer's workshop was this. We were instructed to write about our parents as if we were not related to them. Who was your parent before you were even born? What happened to them? Do the research. Why are they the way they are? Write them as a character outside your relationship to them. That blew my mind, because I had to stop and look at my parents in a totally different way. And what I discovered was that my father himself was in foster care, and in my research, he was in foster care, and his mother died when he was 12. And then, you know, I knew some stuff of what my mother went through, and it just made more sense. That's when I started developing compassion for them. You went further in forgiving. I don't think I'm there yet, but having that kind of compassion, like, oh, this is why they are the way they are, you know? And that was just mind-blowing to me. And then the generational trauma, how that plays itself out, I'm just like, oh, my God. So this book was very healing.
It is, Georgia, and I congratulate you because you broke the cycle. Yeah. You broke that generational curse because I believe my dad was abused. I believe probably his father was abused. They claim the average is about three generations, and then somebody will come along and have the stamina or the opportunity to not let it happen again, not to pass it on down. But did you find out when you wrote the book, and 10 years is a long time to write a book, that it, when it was finally out, what kind of reaction, connections, life-changing stories? Because that's what I love about this, because I get emails and letters and texts, and literally they call and say, hey, I just wrote the book. I want to tell you my story. And it's like, wow, that's why I wrote it. What kind of reaction are you getting from yours?
That was the same. I mean, it's very rare that I had a few people react the way your college roommate, Steve, reacted, like, oh, it's too much. I don't want to hear this. It's, you know, I have gotten that. But mostly, I mean, over 90% are people like, oh, my God, I had no idea this is what foster kids go through. You know, they have an education through a story. You know, this is what the system is like, you know, because I always want people to look at, like, where would you be without your family? You know, well, this book answers that. It tells you how the system works. But that getting that awareness of, in addition to the story, it's like, this is how, what we do with children when they can't live with their families for one reason or another. And how that compounds the trauma as well. I got a lot of men, actually, you know, after I do a book reading, come up to me afterwards and say, yeah, me too. Yeah, that, you know, the abuse part, you know, and how widespread it is. Like, that to me, for all walks of life, you know, that surprised me. And it encouraged and inspired others to write their own stories, which I'm excited about. And lastly, it led me to my job, my current job, Connect Our Kids. And so it's changed my life in so many ways, but also it's brought a lot of awareness out there. And I've had even people say, I'm taking in teenagers now because of you. So, you know, I mean, it doesn't get better than that, you know.
You're changing lives. You're making impacts. And when you can impact another child, life doesn't get better than that.
No.
Yeah. And so you're taking all that negative junk and turn it into positivity. And you're giving people hope when they look hopeless. One question before we start talking about Connect Our Kids.
Okay.
It just came to me while you was talking. What do you feel? Because I think you're the first foster child that I've got a chance to interview on these programs. What do you feel you were robbed of being in the system? What did you miss the most? What is that void? That's like, wait, every other high school girl got to do that. I didn't. What was that void?
How much time do we have? honestly, I felt like I was robbed of normalcy. That's what I really wanted. I wanted just normalcy. It felt like chaos that I had no control over of. And I was like, oh, I just wanted to be normal. I didn't want to be called a foster child. So I didn't announce it. You know, people do talk about their families, and when they would ask me, I didn't hide. I just didn't announce it. I just didn't. But when it finally found, like, what about your parents? I said, I just glossed it over. I just said, oh, you know, my dad's getting his act together, and I love him, but my mother passed away, and they're just trying to find relatives for me right now. That was the most sanitized version, and it was, like, half untrue. But I just didn't feel like talking about it. I just wanted to be as normal as possible. That was like the biggest thing for me. I didn't want to be outed. You know, I didn't want to that's why when I hear about like people who want to help foster kids in college level, They say it's really hard because they don't want to self-identify. Yeah, I get it. I totally understand that. I used to have, when I was in college, I wrote for my college newspaper, like it was like 30,000, audience members, again, early in the internet world. I didn't talk about foster care once, and I had a platform for like 2 years, did not even mention it once.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, again, the shame. And I wrote about it, but privately. I mean, it took me 10 years, you know. I was like, am I ready to share this with the world? And so, but I was robbed. I felt just of normalcy, of consistency. I know where I'm going to lay my head at night, you know, because when I moved around a lot and there's all these factors that I had no control over, you know, I wanted stability and normalcy more than anything, just a bare minimum of that.
Right. Okay, so now you're involved with Connect Our Kids. Tell me about that. What's the and you smiled real big, so that's a good thing. What is that program all about? What are they passionate about?
I will talk to you about it, and I will talk about my role with it. But I really strongly encourage you to have the two co-founders, because their story of how this organization came about, and they have so much more information than I do. It's Dr. Jennifer Jacobs and Jessica Stern. They're the co-founders of Connect Our Kids. And oh my God, they will blow your mind. I connected with Connect Our Kids about 4 years ago, actually on LinkedIn. You know, Jessica reached out to me, and she likes to tell the story of like, I didn't respond right away, which is true. I just was in a dark space. I was not responding to people at that point. I was really depressed. But then she's very persistent, reached out to me again. And then we met, and she had this idea. She's like, you know, there's all these family members out there, and we have the technology to find family. Why aren't we doing it? And so, she and Dr. Jennifer Jacobs, who worked in Homeland Security, and she knew a little bit about foster care. She read a Time magazine article about it, but she knew from her day job that we have the technology to track down a terrorist and their family in countries you've never heard about, yet we can't find relatives in America, you know? So that didn't make sense to her. So she and Jessica went on this odyssey across the U.S., talking to people of all different levels. How are you finding families? And from there, got a team together, created some tools. And so now what I do is I actually interview the child welfare professionals who actually use this technology to find relatives and supportive networks and see how did it work for them, and like how these children who thought they had nobody actually turns out they have family out there who want to be in their lives, and they're taking them in. It's just, we have a blog on our website, connectourkids.org. www.connectourkids.org. We have a blog which I write all the content there. It's called Connectivity Matters, and that's where you can read these stories that I write about. So that's my role, and it's so healing. And I actually wrote an article recently about how this work has been healing for me personally. So.
Well, it had to be gratifying.
Oh my God, yeah. It does not get better.
Yeah.
But my book led me to, because she, Jessica, heard about my book, or she saw it, and that just, she reached out to me because of it. So,
That's great. And I don't believe in happenstances. I don't believe in coincidences. I believe in divine interventions and crossroads. And there's certain things that happen at certain times that's just like, wait. This is from somebody else that's got a little power here going. If people want to get in touch with you, if there's somebody right now that's in foster care or just got out of foster care or fostering kids and just want some insight, how do they get in touch with you, Georgia? I said, hey, I want to talk to this young lady and find out some tips from her. Can they do that?
Absolutely, they can. They can reach me on my website, www.georgettetodd.com. And if you want, I can email you that link and you want to send it to people. But my personal website's the best way, just filling out the content form, there is the best way. Also, I'm on LinkedIn. That's really the only social media I will do. I'm old. I don't care. So LinkedIn or www.georgettetodd.com. Those are the best ways. And if you have therapists in the audience or people working child welfare, I really highly recommend you could reach out to me or connectourkids.org. They have a way, to email them. You can email them to find out more about the software, especially about the trauma work that we're going to be doing or we're developing. Please reach out to us and find out. There is a way that they could help, for sure. And also, obviously donations. That's how we're able to give these tools out for free, is through kind donations as well. And it's all on the website, connectourkids.org.
Get on there, and you can. There's a lot of information on there, and you can. We have a lot of people that listen in that like to get involved in different organizations.
That's a great way to do it. You will definitely make a difference.
That's wonderful, wonderful. We appreciate you being with us tonight. When the next book comes out, or just when it gets ready to come out, let me know. We'll have you back on. If you want to have the people that you recommended, have them contact me, and I would love to have them back on.
Wonderful.
Thank you for sharing the story. And we like to close every show with the same thing as we do each and every week. No matter what you're going on dealing with in your life, just like Georgette went through, just like what I went through, and maybe what you've gone through, no matter what's happened to you, I always want to encourage you, no matter what. You ready? There's always hope. There's always hope. Don't give up on that. Don't lay your head down on a pillow one more night thinking, I'm done. It's over. There's always hope. You can become victorious after being a victim of things that you just can't even fathom. So hang in there, be tough. Connect with Georgette, connect with me, connect with somebody, but get the words out on paper and don't hold it in anymore. Thank you, Georgette, for being with us tonight. God bless you. We'll see you right here next week with Cindy Stanford with Aces Matter live for another edition of Houston, Texas, Breaking the Silence. God bless you and have a good week. We'll see you.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.